again, fellow travellers, and welcome to podcast 160 in our series You Should Have Been There with me, Mick Webb.
And me, Simon Calder. And this week we're pausing to catch our breath, as it were, and reflect on recent podcasts and some of the more spiritually uplifting stories that have emerged to add to our list of travel miracles.
And let's start with some clarifications to last week's podcast about the many ways of making the modern day pilgrimage to Santiago de Compostela. Now, I mentioned a black cat that I came across as I set out on a long day's trek on the Camino Inglés, and had wondered whether it was going to bring me good or bad luck.
Well, I'm dying to know, how did it pan out?
Well, sort of slightly oddly, really, because, in fact, the day's walking, although quite long and quite hot in temperatures, which I'm glad to say didn't reach quite the heights that they have in southern England today, this being Sunday the 25th of June, and it is very, very hot indeed. And even so, it was all fine, and I mentioned to the host at the B&B that I was staying at, who is a very chatty fellow, that I had in fact come across a black cat, and it seemed to have brought me luck. And he said, well, that's surprising, because here in Galicia, the last thing you want is a black cat crossing your path, because it is bad luck. He said, unless, he said, you manage to reverse the evil spell by looking it in the eyes. Well, I look back through my photos of the black cat. I did take two or three because I'm a bit silly and soppy about cats. And there was one with its green eyes sort of staring straight into my camera. So I gather it that was why everything had worked out quite well.
Well, I would keep that picture. In fact, probably carry it with you at all times. This is very good. I do say good morning, Mr. Magpie, etc. when I see a magpie. But on the black cat front, correlation is not causation. But on the morning of my interview with the BBC in the dark and distant 20th century, I was staying in some god-awful, sleeping on the floor of somebody's god-awful flat in Streatham, and I came out to get the bus to Broadcasting House, and would you believe, a black cat walked across my path, and I subsequently got the job, but it's not for me to say whether that was actually good or indeed bad luck. I don't think, in terms of superstition and spirituality and so on, that we made it clear last week that our location for the interview about pilgrimages with Camino expert and novelist Stephen Marriott was actually at Southwark Cathedral, right next to the traditional starting point of the Pilgrim's Way to Canterbury. And you can, of course, still make that journey today. I think I said it was 70 miles. It's actually just 60 miles. So, you could do that in a day, couldn't you, Mick?
Well, I think I'd need more than one black cat to help me along my way, I think. Probably a whole... you don't get flocks of cats, do you? But no, is the answer to that. I would like to do 60 miles in 4 days, ideally. I could manage it in three. How about you?
Oh, I'd say it's a good 3 days. 20 miles a day, that because, of course, it's mostly flat. There's a little bit of bumpiness around the North Downs. But I think the main thing would be making sure you're stopping off in lovely, interesting places along the way, notably beautiful Rochester and the cathedral and castle there.
Well, maybe we should revisit a magical moment from our conversation with Stephen when we were talking about the emotions you feel when you arrive in the marvellous square in front of the Cathedral of St. James in Santiago de Compostela. But is that feeling equally powerful if you complete another of the very many Caminos de Santiago?
It is, yes. And I've arrived a couple of times, obviously, having walked more than one Camino. And I have to say that the most recent one, after the Camino Portuguese, I was thinking to myself, how is it going to feel this time? You know, will I have the same emotional effects? And this, the Camino Portuguese is shorter, so I hadn't had the whole month. As in the France says, you know, this was about 2 weeks. How was I going to feel, and how would it be? And I was there in time for the midday pilgrim mass. But I found, and I walked with my partner on this one, Emma, we found ourselves within about 10 minutes of arriving outside the cathedral on its rooftop. Can you believe that? And we didn't even know you could go on the rooftop, but apparently there's a rooftop tour. It's terraced, the roof, so you can go up there. And an Italian fella came up to us and he said, I have two tickets in 10 minutes time. I think it was 11 o'clock for the tour of the rooftop. And my partner's not very well. We can't go. Would you like the tickets? And they must have just seen us staring up at the statue of St. James, sort of a bit mesmerised, but not. And I was still probably thinking, you know, how am I feeling about this? But literally within 10 minutes of arriving in Santiago, we were looking down at the big square that, you know, that you described,
amazing.
And you know, watching pilgrims arriving, and you know, some falling to their knees and praying outside, and cyclists arriving with their bikes in the middle of the plaza. And so that was it was emotional, because we were, you know, we were up with St. James watching the pilgrims arrive.
That
so
is that a Camino was, miracle.
It is.
Yes,
and,
it
know,
is.
It was completely unexpected, obviously.
The miracle of the 11 o'clock rooftop tour, I suppose. Or indeed, we might have to just file it under the heading Kindness of Strangers. And we are still very much collecting secular and religious miracles. Secular travel miracles being those where something happens that you really couldn't expect. And for example, last summer, you might recall, I was on a train which reached a dead end, late, missed connections and everything else. And suddenly there was an announcement, which was that it had turned into the Florence Express. So that sort of thing, where there is simply no reason to think that you will be rescued, but you are.
That's certainly not what you expect on an English train. I mean, normally the kind of announcement that you get is that this train, in order to catch up on the time that it has lost due to whatever excuse they happen to have at the time, will not be stopping at X, Y, and Z stations, but just going straight to Waterloo, for example, when actually the station you wanted to get off at was indeed one of the ones it's now not going to stop at. That seems to be the kind of anti-miracle, if there is.
Oh, no, because if you just dashed to the last station before Waterloo and leapt on board and thought, oh, well, this is going to take half an hour because it will stop everywhere, and suddenly 15 minutes later you're at Waterloo, that, I'm afraid, Mick, is another miracle of the train.
Oh, so that means one traveller's miracle is another traveller's
misery.
Miracles and misery, yes.
Equal quantities, I understand, at least in Roman Catholicism.
Well, thank you for enlightening me. And you actually last week contributed two secular travel miracles, and I very uncharitably edited them out of the final recording. So here they are, rescued from the virtual bin of podcasting.
I have to bring you a couple of Scandinavian miracles. We have the miracle of the train, which is catching a perfectly ordinary domestic flight from Bodø in the far north of Norway to Oslo, where, thanks to the extraordinary punctuality of the flight and the design of Oslo Airport, the flight landed at the furthest gate you could possibly be at from the railway station, and yet I still managed to be on a train leaving Oslo Airport before the flight was due to arrive. There we are. And the miracle of the lift. This was an extraordinary event with a religious connection. I was in the beautiful market town of Tunde in far southwestern Denmark, wanting to go to Mørkøtinde, which you will know is the home of Joachim, Prince of Denmark. To go or not to go, that was the question, because there weren't any buses. So I hitched and got a lift with Kim, okay, who for the very first time said, okay, oh, you want to go to this lovely town? I live there. I'm going to drop you off and then just come round, knock on my fence, I'll be in the garden, and when you have finished looking around, I will drive you back into Tunde. So this is officially the lift that keeps on giving. Mm-hmm. Mick, thanks so much for, taking those from the cutting room floor and splicing them together so brilliantly. And there was one more miracle of the lift, actually, which happened in the Lofoten Islands earlier this month. That was the miracle of the sightseeing lift givers. So it was an absolutely miserable, cold day north of the Arctic Circle. There was no prospect of getting to the end of the road to a place which is not just monosyllabic, but just one letter, A or U. And this French couple picked us up, took us there and said, we're going sightseeing. And we spent really the rest of the a very nice day going around in their hire car. The miracle of the the sightseeing lift givers. And we're very keen, of course, to get your miracles, secular or otherwise. You can tweet us at YouShouldHaveBT or send us an audio message to anchor.fm/YouShouldHaveBeenThere and follow the instructions.
Let's turn our attention to podcast 158, which was, you know you're in a frontier town when... And we came up with a number of interesting architectural and cultural contrasts that can be found even on different sides of the same street.
And one of our examples came from the Pyrenean border town of Le Pertus, which morphs seamlessly into the Spanish settlement of La Junquera, or if you're Catalan, I think it's La Jonquera. Gordon Stone, our listener, who set out to walk a chunk of the Spanish Pyrenean long distance path, the GR11, got in touch with this message, which indeed he did leave at anchor.fm/YouShouldHaveBeenThere.
Hi, Simon and Mick. La Jonquera is actually on the GR11 and is a frontier town. And at first look, it is very unattractive. However, if you sort of look behind the main road, its old town is rather nice. And also, its hotels offer extremely good value, typically less than €50 a night for very good accommodation. I also found a beautiful hotel restaurant which served an amazing quality three-course dinner for less than €14. One further point, though, is that as you move further east, the lack of suitable accommodation makes it very difficult, actually, to complete the route of the GR11 to the coast.
So thank you very much to Gordon Stone, who had a couple of other bits of consumer advice for travellers in the Pyrenean region.
Hi, Mick and Simon. It's Gordon Stone here with the third and fourth observation about my trip to the Spanish Pyrenees on the GR11. Okay, the third one is about the mobile signal in Andorra. Now, at first I thought it was just actually rubbish, but when I got home, I found out it's not that. It is the fact that it is not included in home-to-home usage for certain mobile contracts. And that means you end up having to pay for it, unlike France or Spain. The second point is about Spanish banks. Most of them are now charging for cash point withdrawals. For example, Santander wanted €7 for a €70 withdrawal. Go across into France and you will find that you're not getting charged in most cases. But some French banks are also now charging as well. Thank you. Bye.
Andorra is a bit of a law unto itself, isn't it, Simon?
It is outside the European Union, of course, which explains also why Paz de la Casa, as mentioned, I think, a couple of weeks ago, is the most inglorious border town. It's just wall-to-wall duty-free shops. Anyway, Andorra is a foreign country. They do things differently there. And in terms of ATM charges, yeah, increasingly there are fees for getting money out that you pay directly for using that ATM. So even if you've got a great deal with your bank, you're still going to be paying out. So if you can possibly source some cheap euros before you leave the UK, that is going to be to your advantage.
Is there any mileage in the good old UK in its post-Brexit manifestation going down the same route as Andorra and just turning our islands into some massive duty-free destination?
There isn't, because our duties are too high. And so therefore, actually, what we've done is we've turned Ireland and Calais and everywhere else back into duty-free hypermarkets. But at the same time, as we've said, great, you can bring in duty-free from those places, we've also hugely reduced the amount that you can bring back. So if you're traveling with a car, you used to be able to bring 90 litres back. Now it's only 18, so a drop of 80% there. And HM Revenue and Customs says very strictly, if you bring back 19 litres of wine, you will be paying duty on the whole lot.
Oh, gosh, that's another thing I didn't know. Not that I think I have ever managed to bring quite so much wine back with me. The worst wine experience I had was really quite a few years ago when Steph and I went in some rather dodgy old car to France. And on the way back, we stopped beside the River Loire, I think, which is a smaller version of the Loire.
I think you mean the Loire without an E. So it's
Gosh, you're absolutely right. Thank you so much.
And a beautiful region.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And we stayed in a hotel, and we drank some very pale rosé wine, which was almost grey. I think it might actually be called vin gris, which we enjoyed so much that we went to the chateau which it came from and bought a case of it. Well, it was a cardboard box full, and brought it back to the UK. And not particularly expensive, but what we foolishly did as we were living in a top floor flat in London was store the wine probably rather too close to a radiator. So so when the next Christmas we triumphantly brought out our special French wine for the delight of our dinner guests, it had turned into a not particularly special kind of vinegar.
I'm really sorry to hear it. Yes, again, drink that wine while it's young, especially if it's vin gris, yes. Grey wine.
Yeah, and of course, this is another, it's a well-known travel saying, isn't it? It never tastes the same when you bring it back as it does when you're actually there.
Exactly. That most definitely applies to all liqueurs which are of a colour which you would not naturally find in any other circumstance. So please, you have been
and often with the hand of a monk involved in them.
Yes. Usually.
Usually. well, another highlight in last week's podcast was a satirical tweet from Jockey Wilson Says, which was actually on the subject of Brexit, saying something along the lines of Jockey Wilson Says had not actually experienced any delays whatsoever, and in fact had got through several borders in the EU much more quickly than when we were part of said institution. But actually the tweet was funny on various levels, wasn't it?
Yes, Jockey Wilson Says is a reference to an edition of Top of the Pops. And this goes back to Dex's Midnight Runners. So we're talking about the 1980s here. They had a hit called Jackie Wilson Says, I'm in Heaven When You Smile. And somebody at the BBC had misheard this. And in order to illustrate great Jackie Wilson, instead they got the great Jockey Wilson, overweight darts player of that era. And so Jockey Wilson Says, I admire their humour in picking up that, but I do dispute that anything to do with borders and the EU has got any easier since Brexit. Indeed, many, many things have got a lot tougher.
Well, I bow to your very superior knowledge and experience on this one. But I've just remembered one other thing about the Border Town podcast, which we were intending to include but didn't, which was that special kind of frontier that exists between states within a single country, the USA being a very good example, or indeed other federated countries. And I discovered in my in-depth research that there is actually a town, very small town, called State Line, which is on the very frontier between Nevada and California, which struck me as being quite interesting because Nevada, I gather, is an extremely conservative state in general, whereas California is considered to be much more liberal. And and apparently one of the things that distinguishes the two halves of this splendid little town is that on the Nevada side, there are many casinos which are actually not legal in California unless they're on the territories of Native Americans.
Yes, and you know you're in a Native and American territory if a casino suddenly pops up randomly and you're in the Midwest somewhere. Another example, and again, it happens actually north of the border in Canada, different drinking ages in different provinces. So if you are in Ottawa, Ontario, and you happen to be 19, then if you need a drink, you simply walk or get the bus across the border to Hull, Quebec, whereupon suddenly you are allowed to drink.
Yes, I don't know what other things you can and can't do in state line.
And of course, if you do find yourself near a state line in the US, then be very careful, because if you're doing anything wrong and you continue doing it while crossing the state line, that then becomes a federal offence and much more serious. There's all sorts of things that you could be penalised for, but probably not carrying guns across state lines, although that is, of course, a whole new discussion. Anyway, during the podcast about border towns, there was a kind of miracle which occurred. This was our first AI guest.
There are several indicators that can help you determine if you are in a border town. Here are some common signs to look out for. Geographical location. Border towns are typically situated near national or international borders. If you are in a town that is close to a border, it's likely you are in a border town. Border crossing facilities. One of the most obvious signs is the presence of border crossing points such as checkpoints, customs offices, or immigration stations. These facilities are often located at entry and exit points of a country and indicate that you are in a border town. Bilingual or multilingual signage. In many border towns, you might notice that signs and notices are displayed in multiple languages. This is done to cater to the needs of travelers and residents from both sides of the border. Cultural diversity. Border towns often have a unique blend of cultures and influences from neighboring countries. You might notice a mix of languages, traditions, and cuisines that differ from those in the interior regions of the country. Duty-free shops or outlets offering products from the neighboring country can also be common in such towns.
Well, we called our AI guest Dervla after the great traveller and travel writer Dervla Murphy. And I think we should certainly get her involved in future podcasts, don't you think, Simon?
Oh, I think she has much to bring to the party, and at some stage, probably more than you and I have, but we're not quite there yet, I don't think.
No, but you definitely had your finger on the travel pulse there, though, because last week this email arrived in the You Should Have Been There inbox from Mike Walschlager. Hey, Mick and Simon, just an update here. AI travel assistant Guide Geek sent Michael Matamidi and his wife and toddler to Morocco. It's going well. They have a great apartment in Marrakesh, and Guide Geek is sending them to Fez next week. Next up, who knows? The AI will decide. While this experiment with AI might seem a little out there, a recent survey from travel publisher Matador Network, who created Guide Geek, found that one third of travellers say that they are likely to use AI this year. Michael, who is, should we call him the subject of this experiment, says that navigating the cobblestone streets of the Medina isn't always easy with a baby stroller, but his daughter is developing a laid-back, calm vibe from being around so much activity, and that is priceless. And Mike Walschlager, who sent the email, says that he will be delighted to put us in touch with Michael, who is on this AI guided tour. So maybe we should try and do that.
Oh, we'll certainly give it a go. Meanwhile, I'm not sure that you can absolutely rely on AI, because if I'm not mistaken, it basically goes around the internet figuring out potentially useful stuff and then sending it across, and it's only as good as the source material. So I think maybe humans still have something to bring to the travel party.
I suppose the same comment could actually be made about all journalists, including us.
Well, yes, but we'll soldier on. Of course, we'd love to hear from you at You Should Have BT on Twitter, and leaving messages at anchor.fm/ You Should Have Been There is always appreciated too. But for now, from me, Simon Calder.
And me, Mick Webb. Goodbye.
Goodbye.